Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, thanks to those listeners sending us messages about on the M7 this morning inbound. There's quite a long tailback on the M7. I'm noticing as we'll check our satellite imagery here that tailback could be in places coming back as far as the Bogeyman. Traffic seems very, very congested along there. The Bogeyman, that's between the Johnson Garden Centre and the Embassy Office Park. Moving on then, past the north, the Circle K Kill station, there seems to be really significant traffic back up there around the Saplings Special School and onwards then as you move through there towards the Bishop's Court Motors as well. A couple of off-ramps there again. Traffic tailbacks quite bad there, and traffic very heavy also moving inwards on the M7 as you pass Delahunt Lore and areas like that as well. If you're caught up in that tailback on the M7, you might consider an alternative route, or indeed text or WhatsApp us here, but not while driving, please, to 0833 97 97 97. And if you tell us, we'll tell everybody else. Now, moving on, did you know that 60 million, I can't believe this actually, 60 million electrical items made their way onto the Irish market in the year 2020? To tell us more about what's going on in regards to that, we're joined once again by the CEO of We Ireland, Leo Donovan. Good morning, Leo.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. I know you have a conference at 10, so we won't detain you beyond your schedule. Now, today is World E-Waste Day, I understand. Let's start with that.
Yeah, it's International Electronic Recycling Day, and really what we're looking at is the worldwide picture. You mentioned there, just in Ireland, we've got 60 million units go on the Irish market every year. Can you believe that? But worldwide, in weight terms, like there's 57 million tons of material goes on. And just put that in proportion, that's like the weight of the Great Wall of China. Every year going on to the worldwide market. So we're consuming a vast volume of resources, metals, plastics, aluminium, copper, and all these other rare earths in these particular electronic appliances that we have to get back recycled. So that's what we're looking at, where we've seen a massive appetite and growth of electronics. People want more electronics as the rest of the world develops, India and China develop. They then demand more products. So we've got a big demand on resources to make all these products.
And indeed, Leo, the growth annually in this problem, in this production, is 3-4%. But in Ireland, 60 million household electrical appliances, tech devices and lighting equipment onto the market in 2020. That number is staggering for a population our size.
Yeah, now this covers a lot of material. So included there would be lighting. So all those LED bulbs that people are buying now and replacing their old fluorescent tubes and their old incandescent tubes, that's also in there. A lot of people are transferring over into more energy-saving products, you know. So, it ranges everything from your dishwasher, washing machine, those large appliances you have in the kitchen, to smaller appliances that you might have up in the bathroom or the bedroom, between hair dryers, electric toothbrushes, the toys. Electric toys are in there as well. We've more and more electric toys going on the market, not to mention the home office and all the technical devices now we're using. Like anything with a lead or a battery is, you know, a household product. And as you know yourself, we're using more and more of these electric appliances around the house.
The real offender, Leo, would seem to be microwaves, ovens, refrigerators. I mean, given that you and I talked about this only in the past week or so, that all retailers now offer the facility of bringing back these items. If you're buying a new one, you bring back the old one. In many cases, if it's fridges or big ticket items, I know this has happened to me in the past, I was buying a washing machine, they'll collect the old one for you from the house when they delivered a new one.
Yeah, now we have a very good take-back rate on the large appliances for that very reason. There's a direct door-to-door service for the customer if they have an old appliance ready for collection. The call really now is for the small appliances, you know, that you don't necessarily have the small broken appliance with you when you go into the store to replace it. And that's the challenge. So people are hoarding these materials. And we know that up to maybe 15, 20 items in the house, electrical items, can be just hoarded, old appliances that are just sitting still in drawers or in the attic or in the shed that just haven't been used and no longer working, but you know, nothing has been done. They're lying there.
Reason for that, Leo, is I might be at this at times myself. When you have the old item, you figure, look, I might get a part for that or whatever else, but it never happens. You're right. It stays in the shelves. It stays in the clogging up the whole house and whatever else, and it's contributing indeed to that problem that's going on. 85% of all material that we collect is recovered for use again. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, like we have two great indigenous businesses here in Ireland, one in KMK in the Midlands and another Irish Lamps there in Athy, and they take in all electrical appliances and have them recycled. And there's a great reverse logistics to start with, but then reverse manufacturing processing going. There's quite high technologies in relation to how we separate out. We have water tables, we have eddy currents, and we even have a new technology from University of Limerick for the manufacturing of the remanufacturing, the unmanufacturing of flat screen television. So look, the technology is there. We can get all this material back out into the worldwide market, and particularly rare earths, you know, the coppers, the aluminiums and those type of metals as well. And it's so important that we keep the sustainability and the recycling and develop the circular economy that we're in to make sure we have a sustainable future.
All right, let's excite the whole audience, Leo, by telling them that embedded in 1 million mobile phones, for example, are 24 kilograms of gold, 16,000 kilograms of copper, 350 kilograms of silver, and 14 kilograms of palladium. I'm not sure what that is, but it's obviously valuable. And all of that can be recovered and returned to the production cycle, which means, of course, that much material doesn't have to be mined out of the ground again. 1 million cell phones. 24 kilograms of gold. I think people are going to be rooting in their drawers pretty quickly. But of course, we'd be talking about a highly technical process here of recovery, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we refer to this as urban mining, and it's a lot more energy efficient to actually extract these precious metals back out of appliances as to digging them out of the ground. And that's what this example is giving us. Yeah, there's an expensive process in the reverse logistics, and the technology to extract it and do that is expensive. But it's not about the value, it's more about the actual materials. Look, if we don't save this for future generations, there won't be any more gold and copper and silver and platinum left to make these particular products. And you know, the same with batteries. You know, the cobalt and the lithium and so on, we're using more and more batteries. Yeah. And it's very important we get the batteries back as well so that we can recover those metals as well.
And many of the supermarkets have boxes when you go inside the door where you can drop the old batteries and whatever else. The unfortunate thing is people continue to throw batteries into the rubbish bin, which you should not do. It's very easy. Stick them in your pocket, bring them back to your local supermarket, and many of them have those boxes just by the windows where you can drop them. And in regards to anything else in the house, today's International E-Waste Day. Think about that. 60 million household electrical appliances onto the Irish market in 2020 and every year. Every one of us can do something to mitigate that particular impact on the environment. So let's begin on this day with that awareness. CEO of We Ireland, Leo Donovan. Good talking to you again, Leo.
You too, Kevin.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I have to say, those are remarkable numbers. When I saw that yesterday when we were doing a production meeting, I said to myself, 60 million? But as Leo points out, it's everything, down to the smallest things of those bulbs and everything else that we all do. Owen, before you pick up on matters discussed at the recent Naas Municipal District meeting, have you an update for us on what's going on out on the M7?
Yeah, so as we've been bringing you up to date on the breakfast show this morning and indeed earlier on, there was a collision on the N7 heading into Dublin, and that was causing significant delays. At the moment, it's quite slow around Junction 7, Junction 8, Kill, up to City West. West, and then from City West into the Red Cow, it's moving at snail's pace. So just be mindful of that. If that is your route this morning, you might want to consider an alternative route. So it's quite slow around Junction 7 and 8 Kill, but very, very slow then after City West heading towards the Red Cow.
Yeah, the City West Business Campus, I noticed there's quite congestion there as we look at the satellite imagery moving in past Newlands Golf Club, very, very heavy as well. And if you're passing in beyond the John F. Kennedy Industrial Estates, considerably heavy traffic all around Dublin, particularly this morning. But dropping back on the M7, as Owen has been doing there, and out of Naas, I just noticed in Naas at the moment, is it in Naas? No. Yeah, just around the racecourse area, in and out of Naas town. Traffic reasonably heavy there at the minute as well. Doesn't seem to be problems in other parts of the county, although if you move up through Salins now, Owen, speaking of your own home place, I'm looking there on both sides, parts of Salins. Indeed, traffic is quite heavy. And your next guest maybe might have been caught up in that even.
Yeah, Fianna Fáil councillor Carmel Kelly of the Naas MD. She joins us now. Good morning to you, Carmel.
Good morning, Owen. Good morning, Clem. No, not caught up in it, thank God.
Well, I suppose the first motion that you brought forward to the meeting as well is in relation to traffic. You wanted the council to assess the Sherlockstown Road along Straffan Way, Willowese, Salins Wood, out that road into the village for additional traffic calming measures. What response did you get?
I'm extremely happy with the response, actually, Owen. You'll know this road, Sherlockstown Road into Salins. Used to be a quiet area of town, but as you listed out there, whole load of new estates in along there, straight run, sharp bend, cars just treating it like our own Mondello Park in Cara. So I'm delighted to say that they are going to assess it for traffic calming. There is an LED, you know, those interactive flashing LED signs. I had one of those installed there about 2 years ago, but it doesn't seem to be working. There's still the traffic. There's so many estates on both sides of the road, and we don't have proper traffic calming measures. So I'm delighted to say that they're going to assess it for traffic calming, and my fellow councillors have agreed to assist if funding is required.
Okay, that's on the Sherlockstown Road. If we head over then to the Monreed Road in Naas, you wanted segregated cycle and walking lanes introduced there.
I did, and I want them to be prioritised. They are going to be introduced. It is part, as the report says, it is planned as part of the strategic cycle network for Naas. So it is on the agenda, but I want it prioritised because with the opening of the bypass, the Monreed Road, some of the traffic has been taken off. The heavy-duty traffic has been taken off this road. It's a straight, wide road. It's ideal for segregated walking and cycle lanes. And with the new school, the Millennium School, opening later this year, I believe it's a pivotal piece of the connectivity puzzle, if you like. We're trying to encourage our children, adults, to walk, to cycle more, and not if the roads aren't capable of taking cycles and walkers.
Well,
and
on that note, Carmel, we had Councillor Bill Clear on the programme last week, or earlier this week, talking about the Osbertown Road. I know you had a motion in as well on it, wanting the council to confirm if there's a plan to provide or reinstate road markings. He said he's not overstating it by saying that a child is going to be seriously hurt if this road isn't properly laid out. This bypass was signed off on. There's still a lot of issues surrounding it, Carmel.
There's absolutely, and my motion on that is because I was almost taken out, and I was driving. I was coming from the Salins direction, heading toward Newbridge on the back road there, as I would call it, the back road to Newbridge. And at that bridge, I was almost taken out of it. I had the right of way.
Carmen, did you see as well last week the bridge was falling down? It was broken.
It was, yeah.
What was that about? Bridge,
that was, what was that about? It looks like some sort of vehicle, which was too large to be on that road, got stuck on the bridge and literally tore itself from the bridge. And actually, the parapet of the bridge is hanging over the water, hanging over the canal. That's how dangerous that corner is.
And this is children are going to be walking along this road to the new Naas Community School.
Well, if you would talk to the road engineers, they would say no, it was never meant for that. They would ask that everybody go along. That's why there's new traffic calming measures in Salins as well, and there's going to be segregated cycle and walking lanes, and that they would ask the children walk and cycle to school along the main road of Salins and down Millennium, that they would ask him not to come along that route.
Okay, what response did you get back to that?
It's only human nature that they want to do that. Oh, I got a response to say that they will reinstate the marking. I mean, the thing about that particular junction is there are signs there.
Mm.
But the road markings, because of all the traffic, because of all the construction work, the road markings have disappeared. And this guy who almost took me out and who was quite abusive, you know, was insisting that he had the right of way.
Okay.
Because there are no road markings.
Finally, yeah. Then, Carmel, you wanted an update on the master plan for the Salins amenity land.
I did, and I'm concerned about slippage in dates. We were initially told that we would have that this would be going out to public consultation about June, then we were told September. So I just wanted in writing, I wanted it out in public, and now I've been told that we will get it by the end of November. And I really want to pin it down that we have that out to the public before Christmas.
Okay.
It's really vital. You know, Salins, we have more and more building going on. We have less and less facilities. Our clubs are oversubscribed. We need this land.
Okay, Fianna Fáil councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Carmel Kelly. Thanks for joining us, Carmel.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, before we hear about those children still being waiting to be allocated a social worker, thanks to the listener who sent me a photo of the area of the mattress at Thompson's Cross on the Athy Kilcullen Road. Actually, I saw that coming in this morning and I meant to refer to it, and thank you for reminding me. The brainlessness and the utter environmental vandalism of somebody who has just sometime during the night, because it wasn't there yesterday evening when I was going home, has come along and tossed a full-size mattress out onto the side of the road. That's the main road just at Thompson's Cross. You can't miss it. It's disgraceful and despicable. And of course, it will have been done when there will have been nobody around. But if somebody did see it or know anything about it, maybe you might get something done for us on that as well and contact the local Gardaí or the council. Clem, I wonder if any of those 300,000 would be those who had the virus. I don't know. In regards to that, I can't ask them, but yeah. Clem, I hear there's gold in them hills in Naas. Tommy O'Reilly in Newbridge. Well, are there gold in the hills in Naas? Let's not start a gold rush. Ah, you tick old Ireland, as usual. Thousands worth of drugs in prison. I don't know what that is about in regards to that. Regarding the N7 and other motorway driving, people need to be educated on how to drive on those roads, such as hogging lanes, especially middle or the overtaking lane. People can't get off the ramps due to hoggers on overtaking lanes, which in turn brings the risk of a crash to a higher level. Garda traffic control should be on our roads at peak times. Yeah, I think I agree with you. The driving behaviour on the M7 is woeful. It's absolutely woeful in terms of the middle lane in particular, where people think it must be the tourist lane. You know, we can observe the beauty of the country. The middle and outer lanes are to facilitate smooth movement of traffic. If you're driving well below the speed limit on the M7, you should move into the left-hand lane, please. And then for those geniuses coming out of Dublin and other places in the evening time who feel to think that the lanes are there to practice swinging to left, swinging right, swinging in at the last moment, I agree with you. The guards are in the wrong places when it comes to some of this stuff. They should be parked on the laybys. Well, there was an unmarked car that had pulled in a van yesterday evening. I don't know for what, maybe for speeding. So that call would go out to everybody.
Now, Clem did mention earlier that there are 326 children in the Kildare, West Wicklow, Dublin, South West HSE area who are without an allocated social worker. That was to the end of April. 3,577 children are awaiting the allocated social workers in the state. Joining me now is the Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North, Raida Cronin, who received this information from Tusla. Good morning, Raida.
Good morning, Ciara. Good morning.
Raida, I checked out Tusla's website yesterday, and it's broken down if you're looking to get in contact with a social worker for children or families by county. And obviously, when it comes to Dublin, it's by the area due to the high population. So the contact for the social worker for children and families here in County Kildare was one contact number, and the address was given as Vista Primary Care Centre. Have you been in touch with parents who have tried to go through the process of contacting a social worker?
Yes, Ciara. I actually asked this question, I sent in this question because of a serious case that I was dealing with around sex abuse for a young constituent here in North Kildare, a very young child who has not been allocated a social worker since their previous social worker left Tusla in early summer. And it's now mid-October and this child and the family need serious support. So I just wanted to know what the situation was generally for all our fragile children who need support. And there's the result, you know, like this state, and when you listen to politicians, we're littered with reports talking about learning curves and new learnings, and there just seems to be very little actual learning on the ground.
Okay, so Raida, what would you like government to do in terms of that? You're mentioning the 326 children who are in Kildare, West Wicklow and Dublin South West. What can be done?
Well, we have a Minister for Children, we have a Department of Children, we have a Children's Ombudsman, we have a Child and Family Agency, Tusla, and to think that we still have 3,577 fragile children who need support without an allocated social worker, it's just a disgrace. The case I was talking about there in North Kildare, I also put down a question on why there was no risk assessment had yet been done by Tusla on the you know, on the alleged perpetrator in this case. And I don't know, I just asked that all the risk assessments generally currently outstanding in the state be looked at, because, you know, we obviously need more social workers, we need more senior social workers to stay. I've been told of situations where very young and inexperienced social workers are themselves kind of, you know, supervising and those coming up again behind them, and we certainly absolutely need more social workers. But you know, when you think about the situation, the sensitivity around young children, we really need to tackle this.
I think everybody can agree, you know, children are the most vulnerable in our society. Raida, we know you're in the opposition currently, you're a member of Sinn Féin. We know when it comes to the opposition, any opposition, it's not just yourselves, whoever's in opposition, they want, or their aim is to form part of a government or the government as a whole. We know Budget 2022 was announced yesterday. A record $716 million was invested into childcare for next year. Was that something that your party was happy with, to see that number?
Well, I was happy to see that they were kind of, there was a focus on childcare, and that was the murmurings that were just coming ahead of budget with the leaks and everything, that they were going to seriously tackle childcare. I wasn't very happy with the way they were doing it. You know, we wanted to give childcare facilities the option of entering a scheme where the state would cover the full wage bill and a portion of other running costs. Now, we weren't going to be able to do that in the first year, but we wanted to do it over a two-year period, which would have reduced the childcare, the amount of money that parents are paying on childcare, which is, like, you know, we've heard it before, it's like another mortgage, and we want to reduce that by two-thirds over the next 2 years. And alongside that, we would have ensured that all workers who are working in the childcare sector, which is a very, very important job, people are giving their most precious possession, their child, over to these people, and we wanted to make sure that all workers there are receiving their living wage. At the moment, 60% are recovering less than that. Listen, Ciara, you know, since I've been become a TD and have access to PQs and all the information I'm able to find, there's no doubt that there is a huge amount of work to be done in this country. This place is failing an awful lot of our vulnerable. And, you know, what Sinn Féin would have done, really, I suppose, in the budget, we would have put people first. Okay. And we would have targeted resources where they're needed most. And, you know, we have the will to do it. We want to do it. We are going to do it.
So,
Rita, when you talk about budgets, it tends to be people are always talking about figures, and you know people don't know how those figures compare.
Rita, we're just a little bit tight for time here. I need to pass over to my colleague Clem. But listen, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. 300. Thank you, Ciara, for highlighting this.
No worries.
Thank you very much.
326 children in Kildare, West Wicklow, Dublin, South West HSE area are without an allocated social worker. Clem.
Thank you, Ciara. I hope you are well. Budget 2022 has been published with a glaring omission. Words of congratulations and gratitude were substituted for tangible, meaningful measures to repay the bravery and heroism of those who toiled selflessly on front lines of the pandemic in our society, keeping our country going and many of our citizens alive. So began an email which I received from our next guest, Assistant Professor at the School of Nursing and Midwifery at Trinity College Dublin, Paul Horan. Good morning to you, Paul. Thank you for joining us. You obviously feel extremely strongly about this.
I do, and it's back to during the pandemic we clapped for our frontline people, yeah. Our student nurses were on the front line not getting paid, and applause doesn't put bread on the table or feed people or pay for people to get to work. The budget is a bit like the Late Show budget, or somebody else described it as, Fiverr Day. But the real people who kept this country going are given promises in this budget that they will perhaps get a St. Bridget's Day national holiday, but that's for everybody. And the question I have for the government is exactly what plans do they really have to tangibly, say thank you in a meaningful way.
Does that word tangibly mean money?
I don't know. There's lots of ways to look at this. Yes, perhaps there should be some form of dividends. I think that's the best way to put it. I do think that there is a difficulty because of the complexity of actually quantifying who really were the frontline heroes. Yeah, we know about the doctors, the nurses, the bin men, the retail staff, the truck drivers. The list is quite large.
The problem being, Paul, of course, that when this was mentioned initially, it was meant that what I would class as a frontline worker, those who were on the front line in our hospitals, who were geared up in PPE equipment and head to toe every day of the week, who stood by the bedsides of people who were passing away without their families being present, and who performed heroically. And then everyone else jumped on the bandwagon, say, well, we want a bit of that as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very difficult thing for the government to deal with. But I'm not going to get into, how they... I'm not bringing a solution here. I'm asking the question. They need to do something. Another thing that I've mentioned, and a couple of TDs are actually going to correspond with the Minister for Health and the Taoiseach on this. One is some form of memorial, a real memorial for the people who died during the pandemic. But more importantly, some form of memorial for the frontline staff who lost their lives in this terrible, terrible tragedy.
Well, maybe that memorial should be for everybody who has lost their lives, not just the frontline staff, but the health sector specifically could do its own memorial. But the government has said that somewhere down the line there will be a memorial service for everybody who has lost their lives. You say other countries have already made payments in the region of 1,000 to 1,500 euro, which would seem to suggest that you would welcome such a payment for health workers here. The problem being, of course, where does all that begin and end? And you also talk about extra leave provisions might be welcomed by some. Again, once one group gets it, everybody else will come out, as they have recently as well, and say, we want that too.
It's extremely complex, Clem, and I just think that this is something we need to get right in whatever way, shape or form, and there shouldn't be any winners or losers in that regard. And my final point is I really welcome the notion of St. Bridget's Day as a national holiday, because 60 to 70% of all the people at the front line, as you would describe it, yeah, and I would agree with you, were women. And it's not about the religious connotation. And actually, I've done a bit of research around this. If we did have a new bank holiday on St. Bridget's Day, it would actually coincide with Candlemas and Elmbach, And that would mean that four of our national holidays coincide with ancient Celtic holidays in Ireland, like Samhain, Lunasa, Beautina, and then you'd have Imbolc.
And it should be Imbolc. And, you know, St. Bridget's Day, like all the national feast days, were hijacked by the Christian churches back in historic times, because all of these, whether it was Lunasa, Samhain, as it, what we now call Halloween, or St. Bridget's Day, which originally was Imbolc, were all pagan festivals originally, whatever you would call them. Anyway, Paul, we leave it there. Thank you indeed for raising those points as regards the sacrifices made by those, particularly in the health sector, you're saying in UKS, but also made by many people, including those who sat in supermarkets serving customers day in, day out and everything else. We could go on and on, but there have been some claims.
I want to make one small point here. And
briefly,
research.
Yeah.
The International Congress of Nursing tells us that approximately 20,000 healthcare professionals internationally died on the front lines. Of them, about 2,500 were nurses, and we need to remember that.
All right, that's a very poignant point. I didn't realise that many of those were the numbers. Assistant Professor at the School of Nursing and Midwifery at Trinity College Dublin, Paul Horan. Thank you, Paul.